Chapter 11. Friday, June 7th, 1776. There is nothing more necessary than good intelligence to frustrate a designing enemy, and nothing requires greater pains to obtain. Letter of George Washington to Robert Morris. It felt like Becky shook me awake the moment I fell asleep. "Make haste, girl," she hissed. "You didn't start the fire. Why are you still abed?" Haste was the word of the day. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't catch up. It did not help that Madam was in a mood. "Girl," she said to me as I prepared to sweep the kitchen floor, "the bedding needs to be aired." "Yes, ma'am." I set the broom back in its place and went upstairs, where I stripped off the bedding, carried it outside, and pegged it to the line. Just as I finished, Madam opened the back door. "Why are you dawdling so?" she yelled. "The floor in here is filthy, and the banister needs to be polished. And I told you to wear your shoes in my house." After I squeezed my feet into those small, dreadful shoes, it was back to the sweeping and then the polishing of the banister with soft rags and beeswax scented with lemon. When I made it halfway up the stairs, Madam yelled at me for airing the bed linen on a day that threatened rain. At least she did not call for Ruth's company. Becky had set my sister to scrubbing the back steps. Ruth hummed so loudly, it put me in mind of a swarm of bees and clover. As I gathered in the sheets, I watched the gate, waiting for the rebels to arrive to arrest the Lockton's and reward me with our liberty. We would be given proper cabins on the ship, I was sure of it. No more riding in the hold with barrels of salt cod. Ruth and me would have a cabin fit for ladies, with bunks and blankets and pillows and 3 meals every day. Yes, indeed, that was my future. "Aren't you done yet?" Becky yelled from the back door. "We have to prepare the drawing room." I shook away my daydreams. The drawing room on the second floor wasn't a room where folks sat with paints and colored chalk to draw pictures like I'd figured. It was another parlor, 3 times the size of the one downstairs. We removed the sheets covering the furniture. 12 chairs with needlework seats were scattered around the room, organized around tables with delicate legs. A low settee stood in front of the fireplace, and a mirror framed in mahogany hung above the mantel, flanked by oil lamps fastened to the walls. "Why this room has to be prepared is beyond me," Becky muttered as we folded the sheets together. "No staff to speak of, the larder half empty, the city getting ready to explode, and she wants this turned out and polished. Of all the foolish..." A loud beating on the front door interrupted her. "Dash it all," Becky exclaimed as she clattered down the stairs. "Keep folding," she called to me. Not for love nor money. I peered out a front window. The group of men clustered on the front steps did not look like angels, but they could have been in disguise. 4 wore the coats, breeches, powdered wigs, and hats of merchants. 1 had papers tucked under his arm. 6 soldiers stood behind them, all wearing uniforms, but carrying long metal bars instead of guns. Becky opened the door, and the men filed inside. I stepped out into the hall and peered down the stairs. The man with the papers under his arm had removed his hat. It was Master Bellingham. My heart sang. A door slammed overhead as Madam flew out of her chamber. "What is the meaning of this?" I pressed myself against the wall so she could rush by me, then followed her down the stairs. The soldiers had split into 2 groups. 1/2 went into the front parlor, and the 1/2 into Lockton's library. Both groups set to remove the windows, prying them out of their casings with the long bars. "What are you doing to my windows?" Madam demanded. Bellingham approached her. "No need to fret, ma'am. We are all called to make sacrifices." "Sacrifices?" Master Lockton asked as he hurried in. "This is thievery. What right have you to destroy my home?" There was a horrific crash in the parlor as the hooks that held up the heavy draperies flew off the wall and landed on the floor. Plaster dust swirled. Bellingham removed the papers under his arm. "You surprise me, Elihu," he said. "I thought a patriot such as yourself would welcome the chance to contribute to the army." Beads of sweat stood at the edge of Lockton's wig. "How does that pertain to the ripping down of my house, James?" Bellingham patted Lockton's shoulder. "We need your lead, friend, for ammunition. Good people throughout the city are donating all the lead they own. The provincial Congress will compensate you, of course, in due time. I've invoices prepared. Madam frowned. How is it possible to turn windows into bullets? The counterweights are made of lead, ma'am, Bellingham explained. And your drapery pulls. This is an outrage, Lockton fumed. No, Elihu, Bellingham said. This is war. Even our churches are making the sacrifice, delivering their bells to be recast as cannon. Surely you do not rate your home above the houses of God. The soldiers left the library, deposited the lead weights by the front door, and headed up to the second floor, knocking their shoulders against the paintings of the Lockton ancestors that lined the staircase. I wanted to shout that they should search for the money in the linen chest. Instead, I shrank against the wall to let them pass.